Welcome, Freedom Fighters, to the Miles for Freedom podcast, the podcast that brings adventure, sport, and awareness to see people freed from slavery. In a world where 27 million people are trapped in human trafficking, we want to bring a series of interviews that will inform, inspire, and influence you to move for freedom. We'll inform you with stories from freedom fighters who are leading movements and organizations. Stories like that of Cheryl Oliver, who left the finance world to help free women from the sex industry in Dayton, Ohio. This podcast will bring inspiration from people like Julia Immelman, who have used sport and adventure to fight trafficking. And most importantly, this series will influence you to ask the question, how can I move for freedom?
Welcome back to episode 2 of the Miles for Freedom podcast. Today we will interview Daniel Lemke, who is the founder of Break the Cycle, the nonprofit that is raising awareness of modern-day slavery, specifically sex trafficking in America. One of the ways they are doing this is with a cycling tour around the United States called Bike Through Traffic. Daniel started his journey cycling from Colorado in April of 2015 and will complete the awareness campaign after 12,000 miles of riding on July 16, 2016. Along the way, he will be speaking at men's groups, churches, schools, youth groups, and other venues. He plans to ride 50 miles a day, burning 3,000 to 5,000 calories each day. At the time of this interview, Daniel was traveling north from Naples, Florida to Atlanta, and was gracious enough to spend a few minutes with us to inspire us to move for freedom. As you will hear in the interview, one of the most important principles of launching a new nonprofit is knowing your why. Knowing why you are doing something that seems impossible to others is the difference between a dream that succeeds and a dream that fails. Throughout today's conversation, you will understand why it is so important that Daniel keeps pedaling. While you are listening, make sure you subscribe to this podcast and find at Bike Through Traffic on social media and bikethroughtraffic.com to support his cause. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks with the next episode.
Hey, Daniel, welcome to the Miles for Freedom podcast. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Ginger. I definitely appreciate it.
I see that you have an event called Bike Through Traffic. Really love the play on words there.
So our nonprofit's called Break the Cycle, and the event that we have right now is called Bike Through Traffic.
So just to get started, spend a few minutes telling our listeners a bit about who you are. Do you have kids? Are you married? Are you in school? Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I'm a single bachelor. So I graduated college and now bicycling around the four corners of the United States to raise awareness about sex trafficking. I have two brothers, an older brother who's a drill instructor for the Marines, and then a younger brother who is studying to be a mechanical engineer. And then grew up in Colorado with my mom, who's a single mom of three boys, essentially. And grew up in Colorado, born and raised there, and then kind of bounced around to different locations to, you know, lived in Chicago for a little while. That's where I went to university. And then worked in Oklahoma for a little while and kind of bounced around to different places. Chicago was kind of where this whole trip just kind of bloomed from there.
Awesome, great. So you went to college. What did you study in college?
Yeah, great question. I studied biblical and theological, but I didn't quite finish my bachelor's degree. I finished up an associate's. It was one of those things, like I was studying biblical and theological out in Chicago, and that just really laid it on my heart to fight sex trafficking because I saw a lot of it happening in Chicago. And that's where I was like, all right, well, this is something that we need to do. We need to fight sex trafficking and get on that board. And so I left school to start a nonprofit, and that's where we are now. The school was North Park University, which is a covenant school on the north end of Chicago. Really, quite an awesome school. A little bit smaller school, like probably 3,500 kids there. But still, you know, you get the whole Chicago lifestyle and awesome people that just come together, and we get to talk religion all the time because it's a covenant school, so a Christian covenant school. But you don't have to be a Christian to go there, which was super awesome. That allowed us to be able to pretty much, you know, have really awesome and amazing debates amongst the different religions there. I mean, my neighbor was Wiccan. One to the right of us was Jewish, the people above us were atheists, the people below us were Mormon. So we just, like, would gather up together on the porch and, you know, crack a beer and just talk, you know. So it was so awesome just getting to hear people's walks of life in that way. And then that's, you know, where basically my faith really set in and really just wanted, where God just really grabbed a hold of me and was like, all right, well, you know, now that you're walking with me a little bit more now, this is what I want you to do. You know, and that's where the whole fighting sex trafficking came about as well. And that's where I've been ever since.
Awesome. So something that jumped out to me at the very end there was, you said that you felt like it was in college that God was kind of tugging on your heart or calling you to something deeper with him, but you had already went in as a Bible and theology major. So how did you decide to be Bible and theology if you weren't living for God before?
Great question. So basically, when I first started going to university, I went for business management. And I wanted to open up a hotel, restaurant, dinner theater when I was older and kind of get that going and I love to entertain people. But then, you know, I was living the college life, you know, the party scene and that kind of stuff, and realized that this isn't so much to be doing. So I started applying to different camps, actually, like Christian camps and that kind of stuff. Because I'd grown up going to a Christian camp called Covenant Heights, and I was like, all right, I'm going to apply and go here. And so I worked up there one summer, and it was really, because, like, before this time, before, you know, up until my freshman year of college, I was kind of, like, living that life of, all right, hey, God's kind of a cool thing, you know, but I'm going to do my thing, you know. Why I chose biblical and theological is because it was a career plan that I knew that I wanted to go down. I knew, basically, from that night when God really got a hold of me, I knew that I wanted to do missions. And I thought that missions looked like, you know, the world race or going across the seas or going with my grandparents or cousins down in South Africa and working with them. Or I don't know, I didn't quite fully know what missions looked like for me, but then this is kind of where I just kind of let God take the wheel, you know. So I go to North Park University and start working there, and going to school and just really diving deep into theology and Christianity and that kind of stuff, and just really figuring out what God had in plan for me. And little to my knowledge did I ever think that I'd be where I'm at now, you know, fighting sex trafficking, going, you know, traveling the entire United States and being, you know, talking to people about Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, like, as of right now, it's either, you know, I'm either talking to people about sex trafficking or I'm talking to them about Jesus. So it's one of those, or it's both, you know, so that's where I'm at now. And I definitely would not have guessed that I'd be here probably 2 or 3 years ago. You know, I would not have thought I'd be on this journey.
Right. So you just turned 23.
Yeah.
Just graduated college. There were probably some people who, like maybe your mom, wasn't too keen on you riding your bike across the United States.
Funny enough, actually, my mom was actually super on board with it. My mom has been very supportive of everything that we do, and she's been a rock star. I mean, yeah, she had a couple, you know, like, you know, is this a good idea? Is this a, you know, good path to go down? And, you know, so we would debate kind of like, you know, the little logistics of what I was doing. But as far as biking for 15 months, my mom was on board. And, you know, even my brothers, you know, my older brother is definitely the kind of guy that, you know, very much likes to play devil's advocate. So we would talk and sit, and I'd say, hey, Vincent, I have this idea. And he'd be like, all right, man, I like that idea, but what if this happened? And he's just kind of poking, kind of testing me a little bit. So eventually, you know, even my brothers were very much on board. My little brother's extremely smart, and so his input on, you know, the logistics as it goes has been essential to the bike ride. So the only people that have really not been too supportive are honestly the people that don't know much about sex trafficking / don't know who I am, you know, because I've been interviewed quite a lot of times, and a lot of the newspapers, when you put them up on their website or that kind of stuff, there's other people that get onto those websites and will just bash. You know, they'll just be like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, I don't even know. They get in this, like, weird mindset that they're, that what I am doing is wrong. And it's like, what do you mean? And so, I don't know. So, for the most part, there's been, I've had, other than those guys, I've had a lot of support. Yeah, I mean, there was a couple people that were like, yeah, right, you're going to bike for 15 months. Uh-huh, sure, you know. And, you know, pigs fly. You know, there was a couple people like that. But for me, that just pushed even harder to prove them wrong.
Right.
Because you know, I'm the kind of guy that says, hey, you think I can't do this? I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to do this. You know, I'm the kind of guy that wants to prove people wrong and show them that it's possible to bike. I mean, a lot of people didn't even think I'd make it the first month, and now I'm 6.5 months into it. But at the same time, it's not really about the bike ride. It's not really about this. It's about the children and the lives that we're saving in the long run. You know, as of right now, are we saving lives? Maybe not. But in the long run, with the awareness that we're bringing and the people that we're talking, money that we're raising, then, yeah, we're saving money. And that's what it's about. I mean, the bike riding itself is mainly a attention grabber. It's a, whoa, dude's on a bike. You know, I want to go talk to that guy. And so when they come over and talk to me, then I can talk to them about what I'm doing. You know, so the bike riding is more just the attention grabbing.
So I have a question about the name, Break the Cycle. Was that a long process? Was it something that, you know, for lack of better words, came in the night, just kind of came to you? And how did you come up with that name?
Yeah, so it was actually kind of interesting. Bike Through Traffic actually came before Break the Cycle, like the name-wise, I guess. So Bike Through Traffic, I was, you know, bicycling through the streets of Chicago, and, you know, I was like, hey, I'm biking through traffic. And I was like, man, that'd be a sweet band name. You know, it's like, that's kind of how that started. And it just kind of trickled down. I was like, wait a second, that's a, you know, fun play on words. It's biking through traffic, what I want to do. And then it's next traffic. You know, it's just, so that's kind of how that came about. And the Break the Cycle came about when, during one of our board meetings, we were talking. And I was like, guys, we need to come up with a slogan. And so we started talking and trying to figure out. Our board meetings consist almost always of extreme puns. We love puns. We love play on words. We love to do that kind of stuff. And so sometimes we don't get things done for a little bit, but eventually we'll get it done. You know. So Break the Cycle came about when my buddy was like, you know, hey, you're gonna be pedaling through. Pedaling and then cycling, so you're cycling, and then once your chain breaks, and like, it just kind of came about that way, and we came up with the slogan, together we can break the cycle, and we were like, oh my gosh, that's so cool, and we jumped up, high-fived, danced around for a little while, because we thought, together we can break the cycle is the coolest slogan ever, you know, so we eventually decided that Break the Cycle is a good nonprofit name, and Bike Through Traffic is a good event name. And then, so we changed our nonprofit name from Bike Through Traffic to Break the Cycle, and then we had the event Bike Through Traffic.
Obviously, you had a board together, had, you know, some brainstorming. Yeah, that can be a long process sometimes, especially when you're trying to be creative, you're excited, but you still want to put something down on paper and you want to be able to kind of start your business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully you remember that for a long time, because, you know, you only start up a company once, and sounds like you guys had a good time. Did you always want to use a bike to fight trafficking? Did you ever think about running through traffic or anything else?
Yes and no. I mean, it took me a little while to figure out how I wanted to raise awareness for sex trafficking. So how I got, like, initiated into fighting sex trafficking was when I was going to school at North Park. I was working at a gym, and one of my clients was a police officer. He was on the case for a nail salon, and the nail salon, the back of it was a brothel where they're selling children out of the back. So it took the police force 2.5 years to convict the lady, and then she was only in jail for 4 months. So that was kind of like the straw on the camel's back for me. You know, it was like, all right, well, we got to do something about this. And so I started, like, going around to different friends and coworkers and teachers and asked them, hey, do you guys know that sex trafficking as a problem in the United States, and a lot of them didn't. So that's kind of where the whole process of, all right, well, how can I raise awareness and let people know that sex trafficking is happening right here in the United States and literally right under our nose and we don't even know it.
Right.
So I started praying about it, trying to figure out what we could do. You know, benefit concerts popped in my mind, art gallery shows popped in my mind, you know, just like T-shirts and stickers and blowing up social media and all these things like just popped into my mind. And kind of around that same time, my buddy called me up one day and I was like, hey man, you know, after we graduate college, let's bike across the United States just for the heck of it. And I was kind of thinking, you know, well, okay, if we're going to be biking across the United States, you know, we're going to meet people that we're going to talk to, so what should we talk to them about? What if we witness to these people or talk to them about world hunger, or what should we talk to them about? And, you know, like I said, kind of around that same time, then eventually it clicked, and I was like, hey, I can talk to people about sex trafficking. That's what I need to talk to these people about that I will meet along with bikers. And the original bike was going from Colorado down to Florida and back. You know, it was going to be a 3,000-mile trip and, you know, a couple months, and we would call it good. But God was like, nope, Daniel, you're going to go bigger, go home. You know, and so I was like, all right, God, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, hit the four corners. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? And he was like, yep, do it. And so I listened, and that's where we are now. My buddy, he got an adult job, so he wasn't able to come with me. But I was still very determined to keep going. And a lot of that determination came from the people saying that I wouldn't do it. And so I was like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. You know, back to that whole case. So prior to this trip, I mean, I was really big into BMXing and downhill mountain biking. You know, I've never once in my life had done a long-distance trip. I think the longest trip I did before this was maybe 20 miles, you know, and that was on a BMX street bike kind of thing, you know. But I never had a road bike before, and I never did that, but...
So you weren't into spandex before this?
Yeah, exactly. No, I wasn't into that at all. It was, BMX shorts, and, I was into hitting big jumps and doing turns and grinding things, you know. That was what I was into, you know. I wasn't into long distance and sweating, and that just didn't seem fun to me. I would laugh at the guys in spandex. I'd be like, yeah, look outside your clothes, sorry. So it's been interesting, you know, how God called people to do his work. And God gets the glory out of it. I mean, for me, I'm, you know, when I was even working out, for example, I was always the, you know, upper body, no cardio kind of guy. Now what am I doing? I'm working out cardio all day, every day, in my leg. It's just funny how God, you know, calls us to do things that we wouldn't expect us to be doing in our lifetime. So, and for me, almost polar opposite of what I had previously done. So.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. My Miles for Freedom was a lot shorter, just a one-day event, but a lot of similarities as far as I used to be a aggressive inline skater, and my dream was to be a missionary and go around, you know, jumping cars and doing half pipes and then preaching afterward.
Heck yeah.
That's kind of what I thought I would do, but then kind of the older I got, I kind of figured maybe I should stop before I break something. We used to be called 72 Miles for Freedom because our first event was 72 miles long. Same thing. I had never skated more than 20 miles, but I felt like God wanted me to do more. So it's kind of interesting hearing how God stretches us and the similarities, what he's doing to fight human trafficking. So I know one of the things I saw from your website was that you really wanted to encourage men in what their role is, you know, fighting sex trafficking. Has that been a challenge?
Yeah, so it's been a challenge in a couple different ways. One way is the fact that a lot of churches these days don't have men's groups. So that's kind of been one of the bigger problems in the sense that I need men's groups, you know? And if I am able to talk to a church that says, hey, yeah, we have a men's group, but I think they meet maybe once a month. And men on board with fighting trafficking is also a big problem because you can't tend to the emotion side of things with you. I can't tell a man a heart-wrenching story about a girl that's been trafficked and get him to be motivated about fighting sex trafficking. You know, because a lot of men, for them, it's got to be something personal. It really has happened either to them or is something that that they see personally. That's how why men get on board with fighting. I can talk to a crowd of men and women and tell them three, four different stories about, you know, a child who's been sex trafficked, and the women in there can be like, oh my goodness, I empathize with them, you know, I feel their pain and that kind of stuff, whereas the men in the room are going to say, well, that's that, you know. it's not because men are heartless or emotionless or that kind of stuff. It's just that's just not how we are wired. We're not wired to let our emotions go crazy when we hear something sad. You know, we'll be a little bit more logical about it and say, all right, well, hey, that's a problem. It doesn't affect my direct family or my friends or my immediate circle, so can do something about it, but I won't do something until it affects me personally.
Right.
So what I try to do is call men out. Because if I challenge a man, then he's going to want to do something. You know, he's going to say, oh, all right, you're challenging me. All right. You know, it's weird. It's kind of, you know, a lot of people that are hearing this are probably going to say, oh, yeah, it's the meatheads, you know, whatever. But at the same time, that's how you get men to do things, is you challenge them. You challenge their masculinity, and not in an offensive way, because you definitely don't want to offend a man, because if you offend them and say, oh, you're not a man, you're a little baby boy or something, you know, like, you call them that, then they're not going to want to do anything there. So we got to call them out and say, all right, guys, so I challenge you to share this post about sex trafficking to 10 of your friends. I bet you won't. That little sentence right at the end, I bet you won't. Gets so many men pumped. It's like, oh, what? You don't think I will? All right, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to do this, you know? You know, so I want to see men become the rescuers of the abusers. You know, so that's kind of why where my heart is with the men on board with fighting sex trafficking. It's not to put men, women aside or shame women or put women in their place. That's not what I want at all. I want men to come up alongside women and fight sex trafficking together. Like my slogan is, together we can break the cycle. And that's really the only way that it'll be done.
Right.
And so that's why my heart is with men and getting them on board. I mean, another aspect to it, a little bit of a side aspect, I guess, is the fact that men are the problem. You know, so if we can get men fighting men, essentially, if men, not fist fighting, not verbal fighting, that kind of stuff, but I mean, you know, basically standing up and saying, I'm going to be a man and not a child molester. Because when you're molesting children, when you are looking at pornography, you are no greater. I mean, let's take that for example. If you are looking at pornography, as a man, you are no greater than a child molester. Reason being is because someone who looks at pornography is fueling the industry so that that child molester, so that that child is a supply for that child molester. You know what I mean?
Right.
You are no greater when you look at pornography than a child molester. Because what is the number one search in porn is young. Young blah, young this, young that. Young is the number one search word in pornography. So take it that way even. If you feel as if you look at pornography and are like, I'm not a child molester. Look at the search words you're typing in. Look at the age range you're looking at. You know, so a lot of my mission is to talk to men, get them on board with fighting sex trafficking, and also bring light to the fact that that sex trafficking and pornography go hand in hand. And if you can't see that, then I encourage you to step back from a second, talk to people, or just simply do research. How many victims of sex trafficking are forced to do pornographic films.
That's a great mission to have, and sounds like you're doing a great job with the awareness. I do want to, for lack of better words, switch gears and talk about your actual bike ride across America. And as you've said twice already, you know, you want to hit the four corners. It sounds like that's something God's really put in your heart, is that phrase, four corners of the earth or four corners of America. Do you have a team that drives ahead of you or beside you? Do they clear, you know, the roadways? Do you have support? Do people go, you know, meet you 40 miles away? How does that work?
So to answer that question simply, I do not. It is just me on the road bicycling. It's just me getting from point A to point B and that kind of stuff. As far as a team is concerned, so we are a nonprofit, and I have a group of team members back home in Colorado that are organizing the places to speak, places to stay, where I'm going, how far, you know, that kind of stuff. So I have a team back home that's doing the logistical side of things. But as far as day-to-day bicycling and the talking and that kind of stuff, that is on my own. So I am bicycling the Four Corners, which comes out to be 15 months total of biking, right around 12,000 miles. And I will... And I set it up so that I'm biking the north during the summer, and now I'm in the south coming into the winter. So I set it up so that I made it that way. So I'll arrive. Right now I am in Florida. I'm in South Florida. I just went through the Everglades, and now making my way up to Atlanta. And then from Atlanta I'll go through Texas and all the main cities in Texas. Then I'll be in San Diego, California, and then I'll make my way up the coast to Seattle, Washington. And then from Seattle, Washington, I'll make my way through Idaho and Montana and a little bit of Utah and Wyoming, and then back home to Colorado. So that's kind of when I'll finish. My end date, as of right now, is July 16th of 2016. So that's when I'm projected to be done. And as far as, you know, gear-wise, so I have everything on my bicycle for that full 15 months. I have, you know, cold weather gear, rain gear, cooking gear, clothes, a sleeping bag, a tent. I even have a hammock. I have all my electronic devices as well. And I try to carry on me four tubes at a time. And as far as tires are concerned, I have one emergency tire, but I've only gone through two sets of tires so far, and I think six or seven tubes, you know, so I haven't gone through that much. I've only camped out 12 nights so far, and I'm mostly, where I'm staying is mostly with either churches, so I'm staying with, like, church family or some along those lines, or Couchsurfers, which is a website that you go on and say, hey, I'm going to be in this city, can I stay at your place, you know, and it's random people, you know, but it's not fully random because they have references and other people that have stayed with them and that kind of stuff, so it's secure that way. As far as what I'm spending, I think so far in the last 6.5 months on gear and food, I've spent right around $900 to $1,000, somewhere around that. So, I mean, it's one of those things, like, I'm not spending much money. It's extremely efficient with, and my bike is holding up amazing, which is a total God thing. And as far as, you know, my body, it took a beating the first month or two, and it takes a beating every here and there, but for the most part, my body is held up very well. And then mentally pretty strong. You know, when I have those down days, I just try to think, you know, why am I biking? And I'm biking for the kids, you know, FTK for the kids. You know, I'm biking for these children to have a better life, to give them a life that they deserve, not the life that they've been given. You know, so I want to, that mentality keeps me going mentally. And then spiritually, man, I got 3 to 8 hours a day to talk to God. is so awesome. However, the downside is the spiritual attack is unreal, absolutely unreal. So, I mean, from day one, you know, Satan was just like, boom, just knocking me down, and it happens a lot, you know. I'm usually a very happy kid. I'm the kind of guy that always has a smile on my face and this kind of stuff, but lately, and every now, not lately, but every now and then, I just have, like, no desire to smile, no desire to, it's so weird, like, the spiritual attack is unreal on this trip, you know, the lies that he'll tell me, saying, you know, you're going to fail, you're not going to make it to the next town, your bike's going to break down, you're not making any difference. Oh, man, that's the biggest one, the lie of, oh, what you're doing is no good, and you're not changing anybody's lives, and you're wasting money, you're wasting time, you're wasting energy, you know, you're useless right now. So that's one of the biggest spiritual attacks that I have constantly.
I would definitely say you're making a difference. You probably don't know, but there's an organization here in Dayton called Be Free Dayton. They used to be associated with Love 146, and then they wanted to start their own chapter organization, and they actually had shared one of your interviews the other day on their Facebook page, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Awesome.
Of course, I had to comment on it and say, I had to say, hey, I'm about to interview him, so.
Yeah. Oh, man, I didn't even know that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Because we've been working pretty closely with Love 146, which has been really awesome. They're an amazing organization. I love them. And then the other organization that we're working really closely with is called Restore One, and they are the first domestic safe home for boy victims of sex trafficking. And so we're working with them, and that's actually where the money that we end up raising on this trip goes to. So we're raising funds to help that safe home keep going.
Wow, so it's the only one in the United States, and when is it scheduled to be open?
Right, so it's going to be finished in November, but then they're hoping to get, because they're going to start with four boys initially, and they're hoping to have that open up between May and July of next year.
Okay.
And it's the first safe home for minors, because there's other safe homes out there that are helping boys and that kind of stuff, and that they're safe home for boys. Usually they're older, but it's also the only safe home that's for minor boys only, essentially.
Okay.
So they're not working with females and that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
At least for right now.
Yeah, Restore One is a great organization, and it's been a few years, maybe about a year ago, I talked to Chris, the founder, by email, because Miles for Freedom, we support organizations in the city where we're doing our Miles for Freedom event, and so I was looking for another place or another organization to fundraise for. They had the blueprints ready for the boys' home, but they didn't have, you know, the building. Nothing had started yet, so it's exciting to watch them on the Restore One Instagram and on their website, you know, seeing the frame of the house go up. And of course I saw that's where actually I found you at, was the interview you were doing. I believe you were in the house or the house was behind you. And so that's when I was like, I got to call this guy. So
awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So I still have Chris on my list of people that I want to interview for podcast. But when I saw your story, I wanted to make sure that we captured the story, because you're living it now. And our podcast, you know, we want to inform people, we want to inspire people, and we want to influence people to do something for freedom. And you've done all of that. You're informed about what's going on in the United States and across the world, and you're definitely, I think, giving people ideas on how they can be influenced and what they can do to fight trafficking. So I really just, you know, enjoy this interview, and I think think a lot of people will have something to think about and something to pray about. You said that that you guys are raising money for Restore One, and I saw you have some T-shirts on your website. How do people donate? What's the best way to donate to your cause?
Yeah, so the best way would be through bikethroughtraffic.com. That's possibly one of the best ways to go about it. We do have a mailing address, which I can give to you, or, you know, whatever, if people want to mail in a check. And then the T-shirt, so how that works is it's a campaign, so it only goes for, I think there's only 13 more days left on it. So we kind of amp that up every couple months or so and just say, hey, get a T-shirt, you know. And that website's really awesome because what it does is we as Bike to Traffic don't have to pay a single penny at all. We just upload a design and people can buy the T-shirt and then we basically get the difference, you know. It costs the website or whatever, $10 or so, and then we get whatever the rest of it, you know. So it's kind of a cool thing, but it only goes for a max of 21 days. So we're down to, I think, 13 now. But that's on our Facebook page, and I'll be posting that a couple times in the next couple days so that people can find that.
Just to kind of wrap up here, how do you stay motivated? Do you listen to music? Do you listen to podcasts? Do you just kind of sing and pray or all the above? You know, are there any books that you read at night? Like, what keeps you going?
Yeah, all of the above. So I listen to my iPod, and then when that dies, I'll listen to, like, a book on tape. But if that's, you know, if I don't feel like doing that, then I'll just ride and listen to God talking. You know, like I said, you know, I got 3 to 8 hours of biking a day. You know, however long I'm going, you know, I got this time to just hang out and talk to God and say, hey, tell me what's going on, what's on your mind, you know. And I can tell him what's on my mind as well. You know, it's that relationship side of Christianity is into talking to the Lord and Savior. You know, so that's what I really like to do, and that's what keeps me motivated as well. But like I said earlier, you know, that, but on top of it is these kids. You know, why am I biking? That's also what's getting me motivated. It's a little bit of both. You know, as far as music, I love listening to, you know, just good old worship music. But at the same time, I love listening to, like, jazz, dubstep, country, good old, you know, the classic, you know, like Iron and Wine, Mumford and Sons, kind of that genre of music as well. Kenny and Sparrow, just kind of that like calming music that just kind of gets me through the day. So whatever it is, whatever I'm listening to, it's one of those things, like, I just try to, sometimes I try to zone out, honestly. I try to just, especially while biking, I'll just be like, all right, I'm going to zone out now and I'm just going to keep biking, you know, because, you know, if I try to stay focused on pedaling, oh, it gets so draining. So I try to just, you know, either zone out or talk to God. Those are probably the two biggest things.
Right.
Yeah.
And then another last question here. You can spend just, you know, a few seconds, 30 seconds maybe, telling us about what you plan on doing when you get back, you know. So it's going to be July 16 of 2016. Then what? What's the next step for your organization?
Oh, man, only 30 seconds. Okay. man, I got a lot of ideas. So really quick bullet points. One is I want to continue Bike Through Traffic, but as a cross-country tour, not a 15-month tour, you know, going coast to coast. So have like 20 to 30 different people bike that, you know, and they'll be all under Bike to Traffic. So that's one idea. The other idea is kind of more a little bit long-term and a little bit more sustainable is having so you have a lot of organizations that are rescuing children, and you have a lot of organizations that are putting them in safe homes and that kind of stuff. But you don't have very many organizations that are after the safe home. So getting them put back into society as a working person. So that's where I want to come in, is helping getting them a job. In that idea, there's a whole bunch of different things. One is aquaponics farm. and then having the sandwich shop, you know, having the food from the aquaponics going to fuel the sandwich shop. So that's another idea. And then the last one is to continue having a bike-a-thon event. So if that would just be like a one-day event where we have people bike 50 miles or so, and it's just this event to raise money and funds, that kind of stuff. With we are planning at the end of this bike ride, so like the last day on when I come to Colorado, we're gonna have a couple thousand people biking with me to be like, hey, yeah, we're back, you know. So kind of continue that annually.
That's great. So we
hope. Those are just like the main ideas, I guess. I have a whole bunch of other ideas that I'm probably gonna do as well, but those are probably the three core. Meaning that I'm going to attack and wrestle when I get back home.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work. So you got a lot of time to think about and to dream up some ideas and write them down at the end of the day. We would like to check back in with you in a few months and kind of get the follow-up story, see what's different, what's the same, and hear more about what you're going to do when you get back. And also, just want to make sure people know that you do have a blog on your website, so hopefully people could check that out, kind of see the stories as you go, and then we'll share your social media sites with our listeners as well. So it was great talking to you, and you know, we're glad that you could be part of the Miles for Freedom podcast and help influence a lot of people.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, thank you so much. This was a true blessing. Thank you very much, Andrew. I appreciate you. Let me be on here and talking with you guys and taking the time yourself as well to talk with me. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll talk to you in a few months.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
We really enjoyed having Daniel with us today, and we hope that you will join us in 2 weeks for episode number 3. Please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast today at milesforfreedom.org/podcast.